This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Welcome to another episode of Business by the Numbers. I'm your host, Hunt Demarest, CPA with Parmelis & Associates. This week, we have a couple completely unrelated topics, but all related to you, because like always, if someone asked about it, a couple of you guys are wondering this as well. So if you're trying to figure out how you can write off your employees' weight loss shots, or even if you need an employee handbook, this week is the episode for you. Before we get into that, I just want to stop and say thank you to you and the rest of the dedicated listeners. Reminder, if you want to hear your question answered on here, just like we are this week, shoot me an email at podcast@parmelis.com. Want to talk to us about accounting and tax services for your shop? Shoot us a text at 301-307-5413. And lastly, but surely not leastly, we cannot forget our dedicated sponsors, Promotive, for being such loyal supporters of the show. If you need to hire the next rock star from your team, give Promotive a call. It's time to hire a superstar for your business. What a grind you have in front of you. Great news. You don't have to go at it alone. Introducing Promotive, a full-service staffing solution for your shop. Let them do the heavy lifting and enlist your hiring partner online at gopromotive.com. To start this week off, we're going to start with a question about weight loss drugs. It's actually a little bit more specific than it sounds because the question was originally kind of tailored towards weight loss drugs here. And if you want the exact same question answered, this is going to be a great answer for you. But where this goes is actually a good segue into a number of other things, which is probably why I included it on here. Let's lay out the question, and Jamie had this question first, so thank you to Jamie for posing this, but I've had a couple of people actually ask the same thing. I'm going to paraphrase this because it came from a number of sources, and to just kind of get some more clarity, take some personal information out of here. But the general idea goes along like this. Hey, Hunt. Reaching out because one of my employees' spouses is currently taking Ozempic, whatever the weight loss drug is. It doesn't matter what the weight loss drug is. It's kind of the same situations. With the rules on the way it is nowadays, you know, I know that the rules on, you know, insurance, medical expenses are getting a little bit blurry. I do not have insurance coverage that is covering this right now. So I've had a couple of you guys reach out to this and offer it for your team members. Here's the argument on that. Team member XYZ is a little bit overweight there. Is there an argument that this weight loss is going to allow them to do their job? And similar to offering a weight loss program like I would a gym membership, can I give this to my team? There's an argument there, and we'll get to that in a second. The other side of it is generally all these questions that you guys are asking me about of writing off weight loss shots is probably you. It's a little bit of a different situation. Because depending on what light you look at yourself in, you could be looked as just like that technician or just like that service advisor. But in another vein, yeah, you are an employee, but you're also an owner as well. This is as clear as mud. My client said that they'd reached out to a couple other people. They weren't able to get an answer. And so what did they do? Like a lot of people in 2025, they went to ChatGPT. And what I want to actually do down here is go down through ChatGPT because the answers that they gave were all kind of accurate. But again, missing some of the context here that they then had to come to me. If you've ever want your question answered about weight loss drug or really any kind of medical reimbursement, this is where we're going to talk about it. The overall question here is, it looks like it's going to be around $1,000 out-of-pocket medical expense on here. And they went to ChatGPT, gave them the situation and said, I would like to pay for this for myself and my employee. What are my options? The first option that they said is they said, great, we will give you 5 different options and even some optional stuff to allow you to build for the future. I'm not going to share this on here because there is some sensitive information, but the way that they answered the question, if you have enough information, probably gave your answer, but it also could lead you into a lot of trouble because it's going to bring up stuff that you maybe had never heard of and probably, you know, go a little bit surface level on a couple of these issues, which can get pretty complicated. So the first recommendation was, number one, Section 105 Medical Reimbursement Plan, also called a MERP, M-E-R-P, set it up. All you got to do is you got to confirm eligibility. And said C-Corp is easy, S-Corp could be trickier, but it's possible. You need to draft a plan, you need to reimburse some other way, and you need to ensure that it's not treated as taxable income and deductible to the business. So if I'm looking at that and I'm a small business owner, I'm going to say, hey, I need to go set up a MERP and I need to do this. I will tell you to stop right there because you are not going to be able to set up a MERP first for a couple of reasons. One, You're probably not a C corporation. And two, if you are a C corporation, this is very hard. It kind of leads us into the second one. A MERP is a little bit different. We're not going to get into it. I've never even seen someone do this, but I have seen someone do something else, and it's very similar. It's called an HRA. So an HRA, as you can see by the title, we love the acronyms here, but it's a very similar setup and a very similar name. A MERP is a medical reimbursement plan. An HRA is a health reimbursement plan. What are the differences? They're subtle, but in the essence, we have the same exact thing. So what this is, and both of these plans that you guys could do right now, but you probably don't want to do one thing that would preclude this, and that's to treat your employees differently. If you sit there and you're saying to yourself, "Hon, I'm taking Ozempic right now, I'm taking this drug that is not qualified, but I want to make sure that my company can reimburse myself for that, can I do that today?" Like ChatGPT said, and I'm going to tell you right now, you absolutely can do this. But what is the third one on there that the IRS says? Ensure IRS compliance and proper documentation. They said, yeah, you could do this. You just need to make sure that you comply to it. And this is the thing with an HRA or really any of these questions where this stuff starts to get really tricky. If you want to do something, there is generally a way to do it and a way to get a tax deduction. But you have to fit into a narrow window. You have to follow the laws. You have to follow the process and procedure. ChatGPT is not going to give that stuff to you. And a lot of people aren't going to give that stuff to you. But luckily for you, I am. So the difference here between making this an acceptable policy that you guys are going to go out and implement compared to what we see nowadays where virtually no one does an HRA, where are we missing here? Where is this opportunity that people are not taking? And the issue comes in on discriminatory benefits. I could go out with my team right now and I could say, Parm Ellison Associates is going to cover this weight loss drug and it's going to cover Hunt's weight loss journey. That is going to be a 100% deductible expense for my business as long as I do that for all of my employees. That right there is what wipes it out for most of you guys. You want to go and you want to cover your weight loss drug? Fine. Any of your employee, if they want to, can go and get reimbursed for the same thing. Because I've had a couple people that come out and they've said, hey, I'm going to set up an HRA. Sometimes they're called QSE HRAs, Qualified Self-Employed HRAs. Group plan HRAs, there's a lot of different things on here, but the same idea is still sound. If you want to do this, if you want to offer a fringe benefit of just about anything on this, you can, but you have to give it to every single one of members of your team. And I'll kind of go back to what we were talking about before there with a little bit of differences. We use the same policy for like a gym membership. Hey, if you want to provide a gym membership as a fringe benefit for your team, you can, but you got to offer it to everyone. Same idea. If you want to pay for your Ozempic and you want to do it officially on there, great. You just have to pay for your entire team's Ozempic if they want it. You don't have to force anyone to be on it, but you have to give them essentially the same benefits or the same opportunity to the benefits. ChatGPT was not done there. They gave us one and two, which is essentially the same thing. If you want to do this, if you want to reimburse yourself for any medical expense that the insurance doesn't cover, you can do this and it can be a deductible business expense. But you would have to do it for everyone, and most of you guys are not going to want to do that. Option three for ChatGPT was optimize prescription purchasing strategy. And it says, review tax treatment of direct pharmacy cash payments. Meaning, at first when I read through this one on here, I thought that they were actually trying to say something else. I'm pretty sure what ChatGPT was saying here is, look at the treatment of how you're treating these payments and treat them differently. More or less, if you want to get the write-off for this, see how your accountant's treating those pharmacy payments and put it to somewhere deductible. If that's what ChatGPT was saying there, then really, that's probably the only piece of advice on here I can agree with. If you want a deduction for this, you're going to have to put it somewhere and hope that no one ever sees it because they do not want you to take a medical deduction. Like I just said, we're not going to deduct that. We're not going to bury that somewhere so that no one else sees it because no one's going to see it and you'll probably get a deduction for it. Proceed with caution here. I would do an HRA if there's only two employees. We do see HRAs sometimes, and I do see some plans where, you know, employees get reimbursed for everything under the sun. Every single one of those businesses is generally a sole owner. The only employee is the only owner, or it's like him and his family. Last two on here that ChatGPT gave out was number four is patient assistance or nonprofit support, essentially saying, it doesn't look like we're going to get a write-off, see if someone will donate this to you guys. And the last one is it doesn't look like we're going to get any deduction on it. You guys can try to deduct the mileage, which again has limitations and it's not really going to work. So all in all, what does ChatGPT say? Hey, try and get a self-funded group insurance policy like an HRA. Don't disagree, but it's going to be cost prohibitive. Probably wouldn't work for you. Number two, allow some sort of copay maximizer to try and get some better Medicare treatment on there. I don't even know what that's supposed to mean. I think ChatGPT just kind of gave them some garbly gook there. And the last one on here, build owner-friendly benefits into the company's compensation strategy, especially useful during tax planning season. Great option there at the end, but it's kind of you answer my question with a question. Client went there and said, how do I build this package? And they came back and said, yeah, you should build it. So what does all this mean? Does this mean that you shouldn't go to ChatGPT for any advice or don't believe it? Like some people say, absolutely not. It is very smart, probably much smarter than me, and it's going to give you a ton of really good advice. The only thing is it's generally going to give you facts. It's generally going to give you bullet points. Be careful with this stuff. Ask a lot of questions and verify. But like I said, if you want to get this stuff, if you want to deduct it and you want to do it officially, you're going to have to offer it to everyone. If you don't want to offer it to anyone, then you either aren't going to take the DAX deduction or you might not be able to take it as loud and proud as you want to. After you've lost all that weight and you got that paid for by the business, it probably moves us to our next question, which has to do with gambling. You're feeling good about your weight loss. You head off to Vegas. Am I going to pay any tax on this and has any of this stuff changed? This leads us to our second question on here. Again, no one gets credit for this one because a couple of you guys have been very concerned about this, but it has to do with some of the gambling rule changes and the gambling loss changes that just came out on a new big, beautiful bill. I touched briefly on this, which is I think why it caused some alarm because I kind of just mentioned this in passing a little bit. I will repeat this again. This is not for certain to be like this forever. They are trying really, really hard to change this. They currently have not, so we're going to talk about it. These rules are not going to change who or how much you get recognized for gambling winnings. All of these rules have to do with how much you can use to offset those gambling winnings. What it is right now is if you get a W-2G for gambling winnings, you're able to deduct up to 100% of losses. So if I get a W-2G for $10,000, I would then go to my client and say, we have a W-2G here for 10 grand. How much money did you lose in gambling? 9 times out of 10, you guys tell me I lost way more than that, but we're not allowed to deduct more than what we won. So if you came back and said, Hunt, I lost 12 grand. I'm going to deduct 10 grand. You have 10 grand of income, 12 grand of losses. We can only take 10. You're not paying any tax on your gambling winnings. They are changing this stuff. And going forward, we're only going to be able to deduct 90%. So if I won 10 grand and I supposedly or even legitimately lost $30,000, the bad news is I'm only deducting 9 grand and the government is always going to get their cut for 10,000. They recently changed these rules for C corporation and carry forward losses. Essentially what the government is saying is every single person that gets a W-2G is going to owe us some money because we can never write off 100% even if we lost all that money. We're only able to cover 90%.
Shop owners, are you struggling to find and retain top-tier talent for your automotive shop? Introducing Promotive, on the web at gopromotive.com. With over 40 years of combined industry and recruiting experience, we're the ultimate staffing solution. We go beyond traditional agencies. Our team provides dedicated recruiters and account managers advising on processes, compensation, and benefits. We focus on placing technicians and service advisors with shops that offer the best culture, training, and long-term growth opportunities. Trust our experience to match the right talent to your shop. We carefully select shops that value employee excellence and provide an environment for success. Our dedicated team leads the entire process, leveraging our industry knowledge and expertise. Partner with Promotive and experience their advantage to help you build a high-performing team that drives your shop's growth. Visit GoPromotive.com today and let us help find and keep the best talent in the industry.
Two aspects in here that we need to kind of talk about, though, and the reason I brought it up is who gets a W-2G and what happens if you do? Before we panic, who is actually going to be affected by this? If you get a W-2G, meaning that you won gambling, you have to report it on your tax return. If you have gambling winnings that you have won otherwise, and they never reported this on a W-2 or 1099 or anything on it, you are technically supposed to report this on your tax return as well. Personally, I've never seen someone report unofficial gambling winnings, only ever reported when you actually get a W-2G. It's also very important to realize who gets a W-2G, because just because you're gambling and just because you're winning, you don't not necessarily get a W-2G every single year. So there's really kind of four different categories that trigger a W-2G. And the first one is if you win $1,200 or more from a slot or a bingo machine. So you hit big on a slot machine, anything more than a one-time $1,200 payout is going to get you a W-2G. If you make $1,500 or more from Keno, you're going to get a W-2G. If you make more than $5,000 from a poker tournament, you're going to get a W-2G. And then the last one on here, which is probably the most common one that we get a W-2G for, is you get $600 or more from winnings where the payout is at least 300 times the amount of the wager. If you make less than a $2 bet and you make more than $600, then you are more than that 300 times. So we get this for horses. Sometimes if you have like a box trifecta or something, you hit big on there, you can get it. Obviously, there's, you know, some casino games that have more than 300 times at once payouts on it, sweepstakes, different things like that. The overall idea is if you're gambling, you're playing table games that don't have that high of stakes, winning or losing, you probably don't even get a W-2G. This might not even apply to you at all. But like I said, it applies to a lot of you guys. The most common one that I see on something like this is like a scratch-off. It's a one-time big event. You get $10,000 on a scratch-off. So let's take a look at what the implications are for something like this. Hun, I want a scratch-off for $10,000. How much tax am I going to owe? And let's say I answer this question last year. So a client calls me up and said, hey, I want a scratch-off for $10,000. How much tax is that going to be? If it's last year, I'm going to tell you zero. As long as you have losses in excess of 10 grand, you're not going to pay any tax on it. Make sure we do the tax return that you have all your losers. We can document that stuff and we're good to go. Currently, my client calls me up with the same exact situation on there. I'm going to say, hey, get together your losses on there. We're going to get to take some, but I know no matter what, we're going to pay gain on $1,000 because we're only able to take 90%. If my client lost 30 grand on scratch offs, we still can only deduct $9,000 and they're going to be paying tax on it. I will say this again, and I will say this very, very clearly. They want this to change really, really bad. Vegas is unhappy about it. If you look at the amount of sports gambling and sports betting websites that are out there, this is big money and they do not want this to happen. Just because they don't want it to happen, does that mean that it's not going to happen? I really don't know. This could go either way. So the one aspect of this where I'm going to say, like, this makes no sense is from the legitimate perspective. You're making me pay tax on all my winnings, but only 90% of my losses. There's virtually no other tax law that works that way. So you have to look at this and you have to say, why is the IRS doing this? I think that the IRS is doing this very similar to the reason of why they got rid of unreimbursed employee deductions on it. Is it just massively, massively abused? Not to single any of my clients out, because all of my clients, when they give me gambling losses, it's all documented and we have it 100%. But this is something that if you look out there in the world, is probably one of kind of the biggest jokes in the automotive world. The joke is, how much is your client's gambling losses? It's probably whatever their W-2G is that they just sent you. It is really, really abused on here. If you look at something like scratch-offs, you've heard probably of these situations. If you have a big winner, people go out and they just get as many losing tickets as they can. Possession is 9/10 of the law. And if I'm in possession of $300,000 worth of losing scratch-offs, how are you going to tell me that I wasn't the one that purchased this? There is legitimate purpose. I get it. You know, if you're a big gambler here, and this could probably affect you. Realistically, though, I think people that are being honest with themselves, even in those situations, probably don't have a whole lot to argue. Let's say you are a professional gambler. Hun, I'm out there playing tournaments. This is my full-time job. First and foremost, to be classified as a professional gambler is very hard. The IRS doesn't like to do it. If you can follow in the, you know, corridor what you're allowed to do, then sure, we'll take it. I've never personally had someone do that. But really, if you want unlimited losses, you know, in excess of what you've contributed, professional gambler tag is the only thing that would help you out there. But then again, just like ChatGPT, if you put this stuff in there, ChatGPT is going to say you should be a professional gambler. And Hunt is here to tell you, I agree with them. But to actually meet that threshold and get the government to agree with you is no small feat. And like I said, I've never seen it personally done. For someone that, you know, that is not a professional gambler, if you have a day job, If you have something else going on, the IRS is probably not going to let you be a professional gambler. So last, but probably not least on here, the last question comes in, and I'm going to paraphrase some of it, but I'm going to really give it to you verbatim. The question goes like this. Enter payroll company's name in here, has approached me for their new HR module, and it's going to be $1,000, $1,200, $1,300 a month, $800 a month. Essentially, I just put in 3 to 4 email questions into one. Hey, Hunt, my payroll company is trying to sell me an HR module, HR support. They're trying to give me a monthly payment for HR, whatever that is. What I'm going to tell you and what I will tell anyone else is that you should never, ever be paying a payroll company for HR support, especially not $1,000 a month. Sure, one of you guys is going to get me a really good payroll company that does really good HR on it. Great. I'm looking at the ADPs, the paychecks, the gusto of the world. You do not want someone that is a one-size-fits-all payroll company to give you a one-size-fits-all HR solution, which is absolutely what they're about to do. They are going to charge you, and they're going to charge you on a monthly basis going forward to not only set up this plan, to audit your plan, and supposedly oversee this plan. It is an absolute waste of money, and I do not recommend anyone doing it. And if you're currently locked into one of these agreements, I feel bad for you, but I would probably look at something different going forward. And here's why. What some of you guys are going to hear when I just said this is that, you know, a handbook is a waste and HR is a waste. We're running shops here. What do we need to worry about? Handbooks. And I think that you have everything to worry about. And this is probably one of the bigger concerns that we have going on. Currently, right now, I have, I think, 3 clients in California that are currently being sued or, you know, in some sort of hot water for a labor claim. Over the last 5 years, I probably at any given point have had a client in California currently getting sued or in court for a labor law. This stuff happens. This stuff is real. And you guys absolutely should be worried about it. So don't think that this is me coming up. We shouldn't hire paychecks or ADP because it's a waste of your money, because HR and handbooks and following these procedures is a waste of your money. No, going through the motions and spending a lot of money to have perceived benefits here, that's the waste of money. You need to have a handbook. You need to have processes and procedures. You need to cover yourself on it. Because guys, whether you think it or not, this exposure is out there. I'll talk a little bit about some of the exposure, and then I'm going to give you a real life example of just something of the litter details that you probably don't think about. So like I said, if you are in California, I'm guessing you already have a handbook. California scares me for a number of reasons, but there's also a ton of labor attorneys out there that are trying very hard to just go after you guys, whether it's overtime, whether it's infringed benefits. If it's not written down somewhere, then you guys probably have some liability. And this is what these lawyers are kind of teeing up on. If you go and you have a written policy that shows how you clock in, how you clock out, how you do vacation, how you do sick time, how you do injuries on this stuff, you should not have any major issues when someone comes around. Why? Because the person that is helping you write that handbook and going through the procedures has done this before. They know the what-if scenario, so they're going to ask you the what-if scenarios. Someone like Gusto or ADP or Paychex is going to give you the same handbook that they've given to the last 100 people. It's going to give you a perception that you are covered, but I'm going to tell you right now that you are probably not unless you've been sued and unless someone's went through that. Why? Because this stuff is just so hard. This stuff is too different depending on where you are. If you're in Maryland, that handbook is going to be different depending on what county you are. And obviously, if you're in America, that handbook is going to be different based on what state you are. How can you have a company that supposedly does a handbook for every single industry in every single state, every kind of business? If you're an expert of all, you're a master of none. Then I would argue that they might not even be a small subject matter expert on most any of this stuff. It's too complicated, guys, and you need to make sure that you have someone that knows what they're doing. Hunt, who should I hire to do this? What should this stuff say? What should this stuff not say? Personally, someone like Sesco, they're an HR company. If it's a Parmelis client, you have access to them. They do a great job. They've written a ton of handbooks on all different kinds of shops. They've seen this before. Does that mean that they're the only person that can write this stuff? No. If you have a good lawyer, lawyers can write this stuff up. They have to have done this before, though. They have to have been experienced on this. They hopefully have representative clients in the past. And I want someone that's going to sit down and learn about my business. It should not be me telling someone, here's what I want you to do and here's what you write in the handbook. This should be a back and forth conversation where you're actually building something that's going to give you value. So the last one on here, if I haven't scared you guys enough about why you have to do this, is my own situation. We have a handbook on here, and every single year that goes by, we usually have to update something because of an issue that we didn't see before, or something where we're like, just like you, hey, I didn't think that we had to talk about adults and put some of this in writing. I thought it was just implied. The big one that came up for us, and one we had to recently update our handbook on, that ended up costing us a little bit of money, not a ton, had to do with vacation and sick time. We had a much longer story, but we had a team member leave. More or less after using vacation and sick time for 2 weeks, they left at the end of those 2 weeks. They had used up more vacation and sick time than they'd ever really got. But yeah, technically on a paycheck, if you were to look at it, there were some hours left over there. So this employee left not under the best terms. And then obviously, since they didn't leave under the best terms on it, we had no intention of paying out any remaining sick or vacation time. Two reasons. We have never paid out sick and vacation time. No one has ever asked for it. No one has ever thought that they were entitled to it. And also, this person didn't even really have any, because if you look at the way that they had accrued it, they had used even more than they had ever accrued. That being said, though, when we went down and we looked at this, we realized that since we did not have a specific saying stated in our employee handbook, we didn't have the sign by all of our employees that we would not be paying out vacation, sick, and overtime on this, or vacation and sick, we would actually have to pay our employee. And this is a state-by-state rule that we'd learned kind of the hard way in Maryland. In Maryland, if you do not have a written policy in place that says that you are not paying out sick and vacation, the state rules that you have to pay this stuff out. Cut and dry, I don't know why the standard would be something like that. I was surprised to hear this. You know, this was probably about a year or two ago in the state of Maryland. You guys might be surprised to hear the exact same. I get it. You don't want to put a handbook in there and have to enforce stuff that you know you guys aren't going to enforce. And I don't think that you should. This is not going through the motions. If you're going to put something in that handbook, you need to follow it. If you're not going to follow it, don't put it in that handbook. And I'm being extremely serious about this stuff. But there's so many of these things, like I just talked about, that you just need to put in writing. You've agreed to it. The team's agreed to it. You guys are all under the same impression. And maybe everyone in current team has been under the same impression for 15 years. All it takes is one new person to get aggressive on here, get disgruntled, and start making a big issue. So if you have an employee handbook already, good. Kudos to you. Your homework is to go back and make sure that that handbook is protecting you like you think. And if you don't have a handbook on it, then this is maybe the pressure to go back and try and look and start that process. So you never plan to lose any weight. You don't gamble, and you already have a handbook on this. Then good news. Sounds like you have it all figured out. But for us of you guys, I hope this is helpful, and I hope that you got some benefit out of this. As always, please share with friends if you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future episodes. Shoot me an email at podcast@parmelis.com. Just want to say thanks again for listening on the Aftermarket Radio Network. You can find all shows on the aftermarketradionetwork.com and on your favorite podcast listening apps. Thanks again for joining me on Business by the Numbers. Stay safe out there, and I'll talk to you all next week.
You've been listening to Business by the Numbers with Hunt Demarest on the Aftermarket Radio Network. Follow Hunt on your favorite podcast listening app. Let him know what you'd like him to cover. His email is in the show notes. Hunt is all for advancing the aftermarket.